Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, it's Annabelle. I'm back, and I have been so looking forward to this because this is a chance to just kind of, for us to just have a conversation, very free-flowing, and I invited some of my friends to join this conversation, and I wanted to also introduce them to everyone in case you haven't met them in person or online. And let's see, I have Eric Byler, who's here. Say hi, Eric.
Hello.
You're calling from San Diego today, right?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, you are? Okay. And I have Jessica English. She's calling from Minnesota. Jessica, you want to say hi?
Hi there.
Hey. So we're still waiting for Janine and Tom to join us. And we actually have Robert calling in from Florida, and I'm going to patch him in a little bit. But I wanted to start with you, Jessica, since I think some people know who you are because they either met you at the intervention on the 29th in October or they've seen your videos or read some of your writing. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I live in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm 33. I am a mom of four, and I'm also a student, and I work for a retailer in Minnesota. I work in the grocery section, so I stock shelves, and I'm also a writer.
Great. And I want you to tell the story from your point of view of what your experience was like being part of the intervention in Washington.
Okay. Well, it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, and so I hope I don't sound really mushy about it and make everybody sick, but it was a really fantastic experience, and it started one day last summer, I think it was August, and I saw a post about the upcoming event, and it was actually a short video, and it featured a man speaking very passionately about his love for this country and the need for a citizens' intervention. And it was just one of those days, and after I watched that, I was like, that is... I am going to be there. I don't care if I have to ride my bike. It was August, so you know I was really optimistic. But I thought if I have to bum rides, I just I really got excited about it. And so I posted on my Facebook page. I signed up. There was a link to sign up to speak at the event. And I posted it on my Facebook page. And then I thought about it for a while, and I decided to do a fundraiser because biking is a little unrealistic when you live in Minnesota, and it's October, it could be a blizzard. So I came up, I'm an avid listener of public radio, and so I came up with, a three-tiered fundraiser, and I decided to put that on my Facebook as well and see how it would go. And fortunately, through the generosity of my friends, I was able to raise enough money to get a plane ticket. And one of my friend's cousin lives in DuPont Circle, and so I stayed with her while I was there. And and I was able to come down. And in leading up to the event, I was doing some writing and thinking about the current state of our democracy. And at the time, Occupy was so new, it hadn't really come out yet, and there just felt like there was this real heaviness at that time. And I just had such a passion and a heart for what was going on, because we had the entire spring and summer where, you know, we were dealing with the debt ceiling debate, and Congress was going to cut Pell Grants, and my state of Minnesota shut down as we questioned whether or not millionaires should pay more taxes or if we should borrow from our schools, and we ended up borrowing from our schools to balance our budget. And so there was this real heaviness in the summer. And So I was thinking about that and writing stuff about that, and then had the opportunity to come down to Citizens Intervention and speak about it, and it was very interesting.
Well, you were, I would say that when I spoke to people about kind of their favorite moments, a lot of people said you were one of the highlights, and said
wow.
They were very moved by your story, because it was very personal. You really shared your struggles with people, and it was very heartfelt and emotional and kind of raw. And yeah, I think anyone who listened to it on video, even they could see, how willing you are to just bare your soul and to try to be heard and try to reach out to people. So I just really appreciated how you delivered your intervention.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I think a lot of us had been looking for the opportunity for a long time, and that really makes a huge difference, just to have a platform in which to share those kinds of things.
I'm going to bring in Tom. Hey, Tom, you're there, right?
Yeah, how are you, Annabelle?
Hey, Tom, Jessica's here, Eric Beiler, and we also have someone calling him from Robert. I'm going to include him in a little bit. But I just wanted to say hey, and I wanted to see if you could just quickly introduce yourself to everyone and maybe respond to what Jessica just said. So,
okay, first
tell
of
us
all,
about you.
Yeah. Hi, first of all, thanks for having me on, and I really appreciate the opportunity to kind of give my side of the story from Citizens Intervention. And I would say, as me in a nutshell, is, I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've lived here for about 6 years now. I've been involved in politics since I was about 16, so that's about 10 years now. And I joined the Coffee Party really early on. I like the message of civility and just everything that the Coffee Party really stood for. I mean, really kind of drilling down and getting to those core issues that everyone can care about, as opposed to the partisan things that, we tend to focus on from a day-to-day basis, but it's about, finding the consensus, which I really, really enjoyed. So that's why I'm here, and that's why I originally got involved, and that's why I came down to the Citizens Intervention to speak with some other like-minded people who, care more about the direction of our country than, scoring a few political points by, rattling off another list of talking points. So,
yeah. So tell me about your experience, and were you there when Jessica spoke?
Yeah, I was, and like you said earlier, I mean, that was just an unbelievable speech, by the way. So I'm one of those people who also thought that was a highlight. For me, I mean, just hearing everyone's stories, and especially Jessica's, I mean, it was really personal, and I guess we can all kind of appreciate that sort of honesty when you ask people how, government policy affects individuals' lives, you don't necessarily think of it in such a personal manner. I mean, there's so many politicians that go on and on about, helping the working class and helping the working poor and, all these different demographics that they make up to, kind of spout talking points or pretend that they're, just an average guy. And I guess it's just good to finally hear something that, this is really what's happening. I mean, this is really what's happening on our streets. So.
Can I respond? I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for that. I was really touched by everybody there and the people who I met that I spoke with, hearing their stories as well. And, I haven't always been in the situation I'm in, and I think that's why I have such a passion and I am so willing to share my experience, because about 10 years ago, I lived in a 5-bedroom home. My husband was an executive at an environmental learning center. I was the chairwoman for the Republican Party in my county, and I really bought into a lot of what I now believe are lies that were told about the hardworking people in this country who are not in the middle class or even those in the middle class. And so when I went through the experience of losing all of that and being in the situation that I am now taught me so much. And so I just wish, you know, that more people could know what it's really like and without having to go through that experience. So,
how are you doing right now, Jessica? Financially,
you know, I have,
mm-hmm.
I have excellent friends and a very loving church and family and or people who I consider family. And so we are doing okay. I'm getting a lot of extra hours at Target leading up to the holiday, so that helps a lot. And school is on break right now, so we're going to make it through Christmas and the holidays. So.
Okay, well, that's good. Hey, Eric, you there?
I'm here. I was going to say that anyone listening who wants to see Jessica's speech, go to citizensintervention.com/Jessica. And Tom, I apologize for not uploading your speech yet, but I'm going to do that tonight.
Yeah. We have a lot of video that we still haven't posted. There's tons of content we're going to be posting, right, Eric?
It's a nightmare because there's two different cameras, and then I have to sync them up, and then, you know, there were sound problems on one of them, and the other one is not a very good recording anyway, and it's fun, but it's hard to do all by yourself.
Yeah. Poor Eric. Okay, well, we have a bunch of callers, actually, so I'm going to start patching them in. Okay, Robert, you've been waiting for a while. You were the first person to call in. Do you want to say hello and introduce yourself?
Hello.
Where are you calling from?
I'm Robert Doyle, mm-hmm. Florida, near Tampa.
And
I'm absolutely amazed at the ignorance of today's electorate.
Mm-hmm.
We just had 8 years of really the worst government that we have had in hundreds of years. And we are stuck with today's new Republican order that wants to and has effectively undone our Constitution. I grew up what they call a service brat. When it was time to go to war, I went to war.
Mm-hmm. And that was Vietnam?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And an after effect was learning that it was fake. It was a fake war.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we are drawing out of the Middle East, a fake war.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans over and over and over. Today we have a non-service Congress. People that have never, never worn the uniform. Pushing us into more war.
Right.
We have crazy
That's a
man,
very good
John,
point.
Crazy man, John McCain. The guy wrecked 7 jet airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And while he did stay as a prisoner of war, he's bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
The man is.
You know, I mean, I think it's a really good point that you bring up about the disconnect between people who are serving in the military right now and people making decisions about the military, making those very critical decisions. And I absolutely agree with you, Robert, that there is a disconnect, and especially given that, you know, today the war has officially ended as of today. And I think it's an interesting coincidence that not only did that happen today, it's also, you know, today is Bill of Rights Day. This is when our Bill of Rights passed. And I think that's the connection between kind of the war on terror and what's kind of happened to our civil liberties and our rights is something that's been on my mind, like, in the last, you know, the last few days. It's just thinking about things like the, you know, National Authorization Defense Act and National Defense Authorization Act, I mean, and sort of what the implications are of that, and just in general, this climate in which it feels like, you know, the police really are willing to treat American citizens that are protesting in the Occupy movement and in other movements, treating them as terrorists. And it turns out, you know, they are considered low-level terrorists by the Department of Defense, officially. So there's a lot going on with our country, and so I'm glad you're able to kind of bring that perspective in. Is there one thing that, Robert, if you could just say, there's one thing you would like Congress to hear from you, if there's one idea or message that you have for them, like what would that be?
End the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Restore the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good point. I'm going to bring in Janine Loudon. She is from Oregon, and she's actually part of our board of directors now. She's been elected. She's the secretary, and she's a big part of the citizens' intervention effort in the planning and in just the activities and just the whole spirit. The whole spirit of it was Janine Loudon. So I want to see. Hey, Janine, can you hear us? Janine, are you there? Maybe she can't hear us. Jenny, just come on in whenever you can. Okay, maybe there's some technical issue. So while we're waiting for Janine, I'm going to also ask Tom the same question. Tom, if there's one message that you want to get across to Congress today, what is that?
Well, I think that I kind of speak for everybody. If we can just say, you know, listen to us. I mean, there are people camping in public spaces because writing letters and demonstrating in the streets, you know, for a few hours apparently isn't working anymore. I mean, we have people that are sleeping outside day in and day out and building these tent cities for a reason. And I think that the reason that all of this is happening and the reason that things are getting so intense right now is because Congress isn't listening. You know, I've written a few letters to, you know, my congressmen and my senators about certain issues that I care about, specifically regarding, you know, SOPA and different things that are going on with the internet right now. And it seems like, you know, if their minds are already made up, and that, I guess, kind of precludes the fact that you know, we're going to be out in the streets protesting and they're just going to be, you know, watching Jersey Shore or something else on TV besides the news, where we're all outside with our signs and are sincerely angry about what's going on with our government right now. So, I mean, to sum it up, that would be the one thing that I would say is, you know, we're here and we're speaking as loud as we can, but, you know, they have to be willing to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jessica? If there's one message that you want Congress to hear from you today, what is that?
Well, I guess I would consider my audience, you know, more than half of Congress makes more than $1 million a year or more. And so I would ask them to walk a mile in our shoes, and after they've walked a mile, go one more. I'm with Tom. I think they need to, but I feel like they need to do more than just listen, because like he said, we've been talking about this and writing letters, and it hasn't just been for the last 4 months. I know I've been involved in the political arena for 15 years, and it just continues to almost be like speaking to a wall. So that, and also doing something about Citizens United, I think that is a huge issue that we need to address. And I'm extremely inspired by Bernie Sanders, but I don't know how far that will get if people don't really start walking a mile in our shoes and really finding out what it's like out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, I'm bringing in another caller. I'm not sure who it is. It's 413 area code. Hello there.
That would probably be me. My name's Kevin Farrell, and I was at the Citizens United, and I heard you speak, Jessica, and I want to tell you, you moved me to tears. I mean, that was totally awesome, and I got to speak with you just before I had to leave that night. But the one message I would send to Congress, if it were me, is the same thing I said there, is we've got to have constitutional amendments, and Bernie Sanders is on the right track with one, and the other one has to say money does not equal speech, because until those things happen, everything else just doesn't matter, really. I would also say that the only way those things are going to happen is they're not going to listen to us. We don't have the money. I used to be working poor. Now I'm non-working poor. If I don't get a job very soon, I'm going to have to go on public assistance. Mm-hmm. And I hate that idea. But that's where I'm at right now. And the only way that we're going to get the changes that we have to get is there's got to be a million people in the street every single day. And that's the only way that's going to happen. And there's going to be riots, and there's going to be fighting of police, and there's going to be all of those things that we saw in the 60s and early 70s. And even then, it's going to get bad. It's going to get very bad, because most people, they're not at the point yet where they're willing to do that. You know, and look at what they just passed in that Defense Authorization Act. My God in heaven, and nobody's paying attention to it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to most people. You know, they're just like hoping if they keep their heads down and don't get noticed that they'll be okay. And I understand that, man. That citizens intervention was the first thing I've done. Because I finally got where keeping my head down and hoping I don't get noticed doesn't work anymore. You know?
Can I ask you what you were doing? What was your job?
Well, I'd been in telecommunications for a while, but I'd also spent a long time unemployed. And my last job that I just got laid off from a month ago was working for a temp agency in Yankee Candle in Deerfield, Massachusetts. And, you know, they're not getting the orders they were expecting this year, so they laid us off. And now now my unemployment's in hock and everything, and I'm probably not going to get it because, you know, corporations get to decide whether or not we get unemployment. You know, it's not just – and I'm at the end of my rope. I'm at the end of my rope.
Wow. I'm going to bring in more callers, but Jessica, Tom, Eric, you guys want to respond to Kevin?
Well, hang in there. It's a tough situation, and know that you're not alone. And, you know, public assistance isn't the worst thing. I don't think people realize that we have not had an increase in the emergency cash assistance that is given to families every month since 1986. So I was under the illusion that I would actually be able to receive enough funds to rent an apartment and, you know, have transportation to get to a job, because you have to work 30 hours a week or be looking for a job 30 hours a week to receive public assistance. And, you know, my family received $421 a month, and that was for a family of four at the time. So my heart goes out to you, and I really hope you can find work soon.
I'm going to bring in another caller. Let's see. This is 937 number. Hi, did you want to join the conversation?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm sorry. There may be a little bit of music in the background there.
It's okay.
I do appreciate podcast. I've moved away there. But this is Chris. I'm another member of the Coffee Party, Chris Ritter. Definitely enjoy hearing this conversation. Really, I did not get to be a part, and you know, certainly does sound like it's just a really moving experience. And you know what I enjoy the most, obviously, maybe selfishly, is that I get to partake or I get to participate in this conversation. You know, it's something that I feel is drawing a lot of people, you know, drawing everybody on this phone together, and you know, just to highlight, of course, the meaningful conversation, but just thank you for inviting me in.
Well, it turns out Chris Ritter is not just a member. He's also on the board now, starting in January. He's been elected as well. We're very excited to have him. So, Chris, I'm glad you called in. This is great. I wasn't sure if you were going to do that. And I know you're going to be joining me next week as well. But I'm curious to know a little bit more about you as well. What is the thing that you would like to get across to Congress right now, if you could just pick up a big megaphone and blast into their ears? Like, what do you want them to hear?
Sure. For me, the message is that change has arrived. You know, I wouldn't necessarily want to put it out there in any such way that, you know, they feel threatened in our presence, because heaven knows, to be in a situation where, you know, we're increasing the threat level does not sound like a good place to be, but more so to invite them in and let them know that this moment that we're having right now, where we're all together, we're sharing the stories of an event that has happened, is indicative of something that I see happening across the United States. And by that, I mean I am participating in activities, sometimes on a professional level, that during my day job, you know, and very much the same experience that we're having right now, I will connect to other people and do things that, you know, thankfully, do result in a paycheck for me. But then the situations where, you know, we're dealing with something that we're all very passionate about, the ability to bring that passion together, granted, it's, you know, it is meaningful spiritually and emotionally, but it's also, you know, it creates results, right? That we're able to get together, we're able to align on an approach, and we're able to take a course of action. That's very powerful. You know, and just to show how pervasive this is, even my daughter is connecting on, you know, video games in much the same way. She's a part of guilds. They'll have discussions about what the group should do. Granted, it's in a video game setting, but it's something that they do for fun. Right. So that means that society has changed. We have a moment. It's I like calling the Occupy movement a movement, or, you know, just to I guess capture that. There's something happening. There's also an evolution. You know, it's an evolution in how we connect, how we communicate, and how we create things on a much larger scale. And I feel if we can share with them that change has arrived and invite them to participate, then maybe we can learn what are their challenges, right? They're spending 30-60% our representatives are of their time to try and get elected. How can we you know, bring other people to that? How can we make that easier on them? How can they connect with us? Or I heard somebody say earlier that, you know, listening isn't enough. I think maybe a revolutionary way to say things is that with this change comes our ability to take control. And it's the message at that point, to summarize, is not that we're looking to convince you to listen and do what we will, but instead let you know that we're taking over.
That's great. I'm going to put you on hold. We have a bunch of callers, you guys. This is pretty cool. We're definitely connecting here. And there is a reason why we're all meeting like this. This is not by weird coincidence. I'm a complete believer that we're meeting. We're destined to figure out how we're going to
turn our country around and get our country back from people who are very self-interested and not really representing us. So let's see. 979 number.
Hi.
Hi.
And this is Sheila in Texas.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for calling.
Hi. You're welcome. I think the first thing we need to do for Congress is have a law passed that says they cannot give themselves a pay raise.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah.
Yes.
Why not be in Congress if you can, name your price? Also, I really think we should be a non-participant from now on in other countries' business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else do you want your Congress to hear from you? If you had that big megaphone that you could blast into them, like what do you want them to hear other than the pay raise and getting out of other countries?
I would say that anyone who takes money as a bribe from corporations to pass a law for the corporations is fired. They're out. No more. You know? That's it.
Mhm. Where in Texas are you, Sheila?
I'm at A&M, College Station.
Okay, cool. Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
I have actually, one more question for you. And this is a question for everybody. I'm interested. I've been, talking about this to everybody. But I think one of the big questions that we have to ask is, given how broken our political system is right now, and everyone agrees it is broken, what do you think it's going to take to really see some serious change in our country?
I think it's going to take a man as president who will not bow to special interests, and will adhere to the Constitution totally, and just veto anything that is against the Constitution. And against the people. I mean, we're all in this together, and I think they ought to listen to all of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks for that, Sheila. Appreciate it. Okay, we have a bunch more callers, but Tom, Eric, Jessica, you guys want to respond? Or I don't know if Janine is on yet, but any of you, you guys want to respond to what Sheila said?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do think that, I guess one of the ideas that I've heard recently is about, mandating that Congress's salary is reduced to the average salary of the American worker. That's one thing that I really kind of entertain. I mean, just on a basic level, but of course, that brings into the whole conversation about how much more corrupt it would actually become when you get a bunch of, broke guys in a room together with power. But, outside of that, I do like your question that you asked, Annabelle, what it's going to take to see some serious change. And I think that, as well as what the rest of the coffee party thinks, that, it's all going to come down to money and politics. And that's one thing that I know that not just our organization, but a lot of other organizations are fighting for. I mean, this is the root that, Lawrence Lessig seems to call it. I mean, this is the root of all evil in politics is the funding that gets pushed into it. So, I mean, I think until we change that, it's going to be really difficult to actually get some people in Congress who will listen to reason as opposed to where their money's coming from.
Definitely. Eric or Jessica, you guys want to say something? Okay, I'll take more callers then. Okay, 267 number. Did you want to do a call?
Annabelle, that sounds like me. Teresa Brown Gold from the October 29th rally, the one with the portrait.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in, and it gives me a chance to say thank you and just how great it was. And hello to Eric, because I think I sent Eric a few emails. Is this for real? I mean, are we really going to be able, just ordinary citizens, to get up on stage and say what we feel and think? And we did, and it was great. And I was determined as ever. When I saw the weather, we have an SUV that eats, you know, a ton of gas, and we're in Pennsylvania, but I said, I don't care, we're going. We stopped at the hardware store and picked up a tarp on the way, and we had to do it. It was awesome, and I thank you for it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You were also a big highlight for people, and I know Eric loved what you did, so it's fantastic that you came. I want to do it again. It was so much work, but I really want to do it again, because it really is about being heard. I mean, that's what it comes down to, and I think, you know, what Occupy has done is just a miracle, because, you know, they did get heard and they did change the conversation. And I'm so grateful for that. But we need to keep talking, and we need to keep talking in a way that will really lead to solutions and changes in our laws, because we don't have a Mubarak that was stepped down like there was in Egypt. You know, we have to change our laws, and it's going to take a lot of conversations to figure out how to change those laws in a way that reflects the Constitution and our values and our ideals and our needs. We have dire needs that are not being met right now, and we can't go on ignoring them. I just read a scary, scary statistic on NPR that said that one out of two Americans are either in poverty or low income. That's half of America. It was just so shocking that I was absolutely floored, and I'm trying to write about this, but the landscape has changed. It's like our country, it's not just talk. Like our country has changed, and we've got to recognize it, and we got to do something about it. Can't go on just arguing about ideology here, right?
Well, that's exactly the point. I think that's why I started the project, where I really wanted to understand what is it that what is really happening to people. And I've written just recently a letter to the editor because we were criticized locally for, you know, it was sort of a local Occupy movement. And, and you know, the gist of the letter was, well, you know, what if I wasn't a hippie? What if I was a former business owner? I mean, what name would you have for me then? And the point is, let's get beyond the name calling. We've got people suffering here. We have people that we expect to be producing for the best country in the world, so we think, but we can't give them access to health care. Well, how are they supposed to take care of themselves and then make this country the best in the world, you know? So anyway, I just am very grateful for the chance to speak up. And as you can tell, I'm very passionate about this issue. And just along the lines of this conversation, you know, I was thinking while I was waiting, you know, what would I want to say? And I think the message is getting out there, but even just as you say, just keep saying it over and over and over, and I hope to do that with art and continue to do it. But the point is that, you know, the money, the lobbying money is making the rules, and those rules are benefiting the corporations. Now, I don't make a judgment on that in the sense that I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, is that what we were built on? And we can see, to me, we have gone off course, off track, and we need to straighten out. You know, this is the lobbying money has gone, it has taken over our government, and then we have to look at finance, campaign finance reform. You know, that kind of thing. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much. We have to do it again. We'll see you very soon. Okay, Deb Gates.
Hi. I just woke up. No, I didn't.
Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. It's kind of good to hear some familiar voices again. you were talking, everybody was kind of talking about what would you like Congress to hear, and I kind of wanted to relay something that was interesting when I did the lobby day, and I spoke with one of my senator's legislative assistant. And he actually told us that what needed to be done, what had to happen, was the movement out there had to escalate. Because we told him, you know, if you don't start listening, if you don't start doing something, the people are really, the time's come for change, and it's going to escalate. And he said, it needs to escalate. And we said, do you really want that? And he said, it has to escalate or nothing's going to change. And I thought that very, very interesting from a legislative assistant to a, you know, he's a longtime person in the Senate there, and for a while anyway, but
right.
I don't know what it's
a threshold. I mean, I guess that's what I want to know is like, what, how, just it's a question about scale here. Like, what's the threshold? Like, what does it take for them to say that's enough? Okay, that's the majority, that they're fed up. It's the people. And, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, watching the coverage of the protests in Russia and then earlier in the year in Europe, there were all these reports basically that said this is the middle class showing up. This isn't just the activists. This is the people showing up to protest. And that they were able to achieve that narrative. And I guess even with all the amazing press coverage of the Occupy, that we didn't get to that. We didn't get to this narrative that this the American middle class is fed up. It's not divided into the left and right. It's just everyone basically singing the same song that this is not working. Our needs are not being met, and we're not going to take it anymore. So I guess, you know, as an organizer, like, I wonder about, is it a question about the media not really picking up what is really going on and telling that story, or we need a million people out on the street to say, there you go, we have a million people. So
that's,
I guess
it.
That's
where you're at, and that's exactly what it's going to take. And if enough people don't do it, and yes, movements have been made, changes have been done by a very limited small groups of people, but you were talking about a different time. You were talking about a time when the Congress really wasn't bought the way it is now. There was no TV commercials, you know. I mean, they weren't campaigning at those times. Their whole time in, they weren't just campaigning. So I think that's what he was meaning was, you have to make this, you have to make it where people are going to lay down everything and say, that's it. We're not going to play your game anymore. We're done.
Yeah.
And how do you do that, you know?
Can I say something about the narrative idea? I really, as an English major, I can connect with that idea because one thing that has frustrated me for years is just Democrats' failure to frame a narrative that's effective. I see it over and over, and I think that's why Newt Gingrich could really surprise people, because he is an effective communicator. And, you know, my Senator Amy Klobuchar is a perfect example of someone who often has a heartless, uninspiring academic explanation for issues and American struggles that are truly gut-wrenching. And so I get frustrated, and I think the number one example of that type of failure was when the unemployment benefits were held hostage. I mean, Barack Obama, at a time of two wars and record financial crisis that resulted from the corruption on Wall Street, allowed the 1% to hold unemployment benefits hostage so they could get more tax breaks. I couldn't believe it. I who would have ever thought that it would be unpopular to extend unemployment benefits to people, most of whom were middle class. They worked for years in management and other middle class jobs. And at a time of 9% unemployment, zero job growth, and a recession that we hadn't seen since the likes of the Great Depression, why did 1% of the population have such an upper hand in that negotiation? It seems to me that that would be an easy thing to get the American public behind, you know, extending benefits, especially when we look at, you know, where does our economic growth come from? Is it from, it's often from the middle class spending. 85% is consumer consumption. So I really think that the story that we tell, that is told to us, that mm-hmm. we hear over and over makes a huge difference in how we act.
Right. I agree. I'm going to bring Diane Owens in. Hey, Diane.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi.
Great. Yeah. It's been a great conversation, and I do want to talk a little bit about my experiences in D.C. at the Citizens Intervention Rally, too. But,
oh, Diane, can you introduce yourself to everyone so they know who you are, how
sure.
important you are to the coffee party?
Well, I don't think I'm important, but I did start going to coffee party meetings way back in March of 2010. And as soon as I was able to become a dues-paying member in February of 2011, I jumped at the chance because I think the coffee party is so important. And I would encourage everybody who listens to this show to, if they haven't joined coffee party as a member, supporting what we're doing, I would encourage you to do that now because that's really, really important for us to continue our work. But so what I'm doing now is basically I'm the chapter development person for Coffee Party USA. And since I mentioned that, I think I'll just go ahead and talk a little bit about why I was so impressed with the Citizens Intervention, the people that were there. Frankly, I didn't get to hear a lot of the speeches because I was volunteering and doing other things when people were talking. But afterwards, and informally after people were done talking, I got to meet so many wonderful people from all over the country who were inspired by that event and what we were doing there to want to go back to their local communities and start their own groups. And I know from experience, I'm in Austin, Texas. That's not an easy thing to do. We started just meeting with just a couple of people and started looking around and finally decided, well, we want to do something. And really the only way you can do that is to organize. And so we've been working since then to organize our local group. We've lobbied at the state capitol. And I think it's important. I know we're talking about going out into the street and with a million people in the street, but we're not there yet. So I think the only way we can get there and get the attention of our elected officials is to actually organize. Organize on the ground, organize on the internet, organize any way we can to get more and more people involved. And I've also come to believe that we're going to have a constitutional amendment. Because, you know, you could work very hard to elect a Democrat or a Republican who says they're for reform, but once they get there, they still need to go to that fundraiser. They still need to get money from the people that have the money, and they're still going to have to pay attention to those people that have money. Mm-hmm. So the only way we can get around that Citizens United decision, which the second anniversary is coming up really soon, is to get people to stand up and demand a constitutional amendment. And I think the only way we can do that is to organize locally and join organizations like the Coffee Party and other organizations that are fighting to get a constitutional amendment. So I'm done with my speech. Thanks, Annabelle.
Can I say something about what Diane just said?
Yeah, sorry, go ahead,
Diane. I was just going to say what Diane was saying about the million people. We're absolutely not there yet, and I agree 100% with her. The only way we can possibly get there, it's what's needed, you know, without a major revolution, which nobody wants that, is, like Diane said, the on-the-ground organizing. And the thing that kind of gave me some ideas was the L.A., Los Angeles,
Move to amend the city council. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The proposal for that, if we could all organize in our own cities and try to get our own cities to do that, that mm-hmm. basically would assure that if we could, it would tell them you have to do this amendment and it will be ratified if
right.
all cities could start getting on that. But the only way to do it is the people who are really dedicated, we're going to have to get out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's extraordinary what they did. I don't know if everyone knows about that, but just did a show with them yesterday, the LA organizers of Mucho Mend. And it took them 9 to 10 months, I think, to organize it. I mean, the advantage they had was that the LA City Council is quite progressive and were receptive to this, and the president of the council, Eric Garcetti, was the one who introduced it. And so they did have that advantage. I mean, it might be a lot harder in other places, but it was completely grassroots. And they put it out there, and it passed unanimously. This resolution saying that, you know, corporations are not people and money's not speech. And that's the amendment that Mucho Mend has been trying to organize on since Citizens United passed. So it's very inspiring. I mean, I agree with you, Diane, about the amendment. I guess the worry I have is that because it's going to take so long to pass an amendment, we don't know how long, but I mean, even the optimists would say it's going to take a long time. And with our economic situation as dire as it is, like the symptoms of the problem. So we all know that, as you know, Tom said and Larry Lessig eloquently says, like the root of the problem is money, but the symptoms, you know, i.e. the economic problems we're having, it's immediate and it's dire, it's urgent, and we're not dealing with it. And so, I mean, I guess that's the part that makes me wonder, like, okay, how do we fix the immediate problem? Because so we're having an economic disaster here. We need relief here. You know, we need something done. Yeah.
Annabelle, can I cut in a little bit?
Of course, yeah.
Well, and I believe it was Jessica talking about the unemployment mm-hmm. bill being held hostage. Well, we're seeing yeah. right now that mm-hmm. the extension of the payroll tax cut for the middle class, basically, mm-hmm. or anybody who's working, who's lucky enough to have a job, that's being held hostage
yeah.
to what? Pipeline, oil company interests, and it's that money.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we try to do to fix the economic problems are going to be blocked by that money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that, yes, I know it's going to take a while for an amendment, but everything we can do to bring the public's attention to the fact that it's the money that's screwing us up is going to speed that day and also put the politicians on notice that we're not going to wait, that we want action now.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that if we don't focus on the money, they're going to keep holding our interests, the people's interests, hostage in order
mm-hmm.
to, you know, basically pay off the people that get them elected.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm going to bring in, and I totally hear you, Diane, and, you know, I'm with you. I want to bring in a call who's been waiting for a while. 360 area code. Hi.
Hi, Annabelle. This is Don. Coffee party guy over here in West Sound, Washington State, and
hey.
I was up there in October with you.
How are you? Thanks
for calling in. I'm doing good.
Hey.
Had to reschedule our first big powwow here. We're going to go for the middle of January now. Too much holiday stuff going on.
Okay.
But I've been listening to your people calling in there and your guests, and you had a gentleman a while back said, you know, the people are going to have to get in the street and it's going to get ugly. And there was a time a few years ago when I would probably disagree with that, but not so much now. I was at the Occupy Seattle Port demonstration Monday night and saw, you know, firsthand confrontation, ate a little pepper spray, you know, kissed a police horse, and then read and saw the really slanted news coverage, you know, the next 24 hours or so. Mm-hmm. You know, the big problem that I see when you're asking people if you could, you know, have Congress do something, you know, what would it be? I really think our biggest issue right now is the Citizens United ruling. I like what Bill Moyers wrote in a foreword for a book that Jeffrey Clements has out, and he says, in the wake of Citizens United, popular resistance is all that can prevent the richest economic interests in the country from buying the democratic process, lock, stock, and barrel. And I truly believe that. I mean, there's things that are being done all over this country right now, attempts to privatize public services, the voter suppression things that are going on, this thing with the military, indefinite military detention that it looks like Obama may sign, and earlier had talked about vetoing, but now it looks like he may sign. I mean, the Constitution is being unraveled. I mean, the ground beneath their feet is being dug away, and I don't like to try to sound dramatic about it or whatever, but I think that the next year or two is really going to tell the story if we're going to be winning this battle or if we're falling down the slope. I mean, I think it really is, as a lot of the speeches go, it's now or never. I'm tired of hearing politicians speak and say that they're talking for the American people when the polls are all saying otherwise. They're not speaking for the American people. They're speaking for their sponsors.
I think what's amazing is that there is so much agreement along exactly what you're saying, Don. I think there's one thing I want to add, though, to this idea that, you know, we need to get a massive number of people out on the street and really have what looks like a popular uprising. I guess the part of the equation that I want to emphasize is, you know, if we could, what to me would be a real game changer is if we had extraordinary voter turnout in elections. The level of participation is, I think, the disengagement is still a problem. The disengagement in the process is still part of the problem. And that is something we the people can do something about. We can go out to vote. We can convince other people to go out to vote. If we can have kind of the voter turnout at the level of, you know, 80, 90, whatever, 100%, then I think there is a chance of that right there. Sheer participation at the voting booths. That
well, I agree in the power of the vote, but you know, when you're up against a situation where maybe five of the few people in the United States that think that corporations are people and money is speech happen to be sitting on the Supreme Court, that's tough to go against when you're at the voting booth, because we don't get to vote them in and out of office. You know, they're there till they die. And you know, that needs to be amended. That thing needs to be repealed, because as long as that torrent of money is going to be able to be directed into all these PACs and on without any accounting of where it's coming from, it's just that's going to be a tough fight. We can elect people and get them into office to try to do our bidding, but when you have the deck stacked against you with things like that, I think it's kind of a scary situation. That needs to go. I cannot believe that when that passed to begin with back in January of 2010, that people weren't screaming and hollering from the get-go. I mean, nobody really paid attention, kind of like this military detention thing snuck up on everybody, too.
I mean, in so many ways, like with these critical decisions, in retrospect, you think, why didn't we do more? Why didn't we raise the bus? And only in hindsight do we realize that those laws had such a repercussion. Because in a way, like you read the paper and it's overwhelming. There's just so much going on in a given day. And often you read something and you're like, oh, my God, that's so awful or that's so screwed up. And
it gets
saturated. You can only take so much, you know.
Well, that plus a lot of what you're being bombarded with from the media and even the print is misinformation or slanted or just out and out fabrication. You know, I watched the night after the protest, and all of a sudden, you know, the news comes on 24 hours later saying that bricks, gasoline, and a sharpened piece of rebar were thrown at police at the port. That was a total lie. I called them on it and wrote to their website, and they took my post down in about a half hour. You know, nobody responded to it. They didn't put it back on the news again. But I said, who got arrested for that? Who reported that? You know, nobody thought there was protesters there. There were a little out of line, some of the anarchist faction. But every time they started to get a little out of line, cooler heads would say, hey, that's not what we're about. You know, this isn't about anything violent. And, you know, I know that if anybody had thrown something that would have been potentially lethal, they would have been taken down and held till the police came and got them. And the police would have reacted as such, too, and they didn't. I mean, they were fairly restrained, really. I mean, they used pepper spray and some stun grenades, but they weren't swinging billy clubs or being overly zealous, in my opinion. And, you know, this is what we're up against. And I'll just leave you with something I'm sure you heard, the Sinclair Lewis quote, that when fascism comes to America, that it'll be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross.
Yeah. Right. Well, thanks, Don. I want to hear more. I want to talk to you maybe next week. Maybe you can come back on as a guest, because I want to hear more about what you have
okay, great.
And locally. But thanks for calling, Don.
You bet. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. So, Jessica, Tom, Diane, you guys are still on. What do you guys think? What's on your mind right now? Tom,
I mean, in regard to the media, I mean, you know, he mentioned that, you know, everything's kind of slanted and a complete fabrication. But I mean, that's not to mention the stuff that we're not hearing. I mean, the absolute nonsense that is on the news when we have all these really important issues and, you know, really important things that the public needs to be informed about, and they just aren't. You know, I mean, I think I read a protest sign somewhere, but I mean, it essentially said, if it wasn't for CNN, I wouldn't know what's happening on Twitter, and I completely believe that.
I'm with you on the media thing. You know, I was shocked when I went to my own Occupy Minneapolis and saw what it was really all about. I thought it would be a lot of young people, and it was really actually a lot of people my age or older. And there was a family area. There were all kinds of classes taking place. I actually got to take my kids one night when we celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day. And it was a Monday night, and it was raining a little bit, and it was dark, and we were all dancing together. They opened up the circle, the Indigenous people that were there, and we encircled an entire half city block, the entire plaza, all holding hands, dancing together, and hearing these amazing Native American speakers. It was phenomenal, and I think of all the attention that the Tea Partiers got, and I think the media is really missing the party. I mean, it was pretty touching, and everybody that was there was, you know, moved to tears, and that's happening, or was happening on a daily basis, and there's still people there, but, you know, it's winter. And I think it's just really surprising to go there and actually see what it's all about. You hear just the scant reporting. Mm-hmm. The press is really falling down on the job.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Diane, what are you thinking?
Well, you know, I agree. It's hard to get traction when you're talking about something in a very reasonable way, and it seems like the only way to get attention is to, you know, get out there and get arrested or do something that sounds, or say something that sounds totally off the wall. But it seems to me that in the long run, we have to try to speak the truth and not try to fall into that trap that, oh, we have to act crazy or go out in the streets in order to get attention. I'm not against protesting. I mean, I did protest in the 60s. And change did happen, but it really happened because people got organized and got involved and actually made a difference. So, you know, I think the main problem is people don't see a way to get involved, or they don't feel that getting involved is going to make a difference.
Yeah.
So how do we get people to understand that if they're not involved, they're giving up?
Mm-hmm.
And that giving up is just not an option. Like you said, things are so bad that we can't afford to give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, Deb is not online with us, but she is writing in the chat room. And one of the things that she says that I hear all the time is people are giving up, and they are saying it's all too late. You know, that the time for fighting has come and gone. It's just too late. And I know you guys probably all have heard that as well. And I want to put it out there as something to talk about, this sense of defeat that is very prevalent, and that I know that inside the coffee party, like, we attract people who, of course, haven't given up. That's why they're trying to organize and try to initiate dialogue and get information out to people. But the reality is we're up against this attitude, this position that where people have given up. And I guess my reaction is, like, I understand that, and it is tiring, and it is discouraging and overwhelming, but I don't feel like we have tried enough. We haven't really, to me, this is from my perspective, but I come from a country. I've come from South Korea, where we did have a successful democracy movement in the 80s, and people put their lives on the line. They were arrested and tortured, and, you know, people sacrificed themselves for that democracy, and it's there, and it's alive. And so I guess from my perspective, I feel like we haven't done anything like that. We haven't really, put up a fight. So I just wanna put it out there that I don't feel like we have done enough. What do you guys think? Oh, you know, I have a caller that I want to bring in. 808 number. Hi.
Hi, this is Janine.
Hi, Janine. You're with us. Yay.
Hi, I've been sitting here for a while. Wonderful conversation. I'm calling in today from Hawaii. That's why I'm 808.
Okay, great. So, Janine, why don't you introduce yourself to everyone, just whatever's on your mind. Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to interrupt this line of thinking too much. I think it's a great thought thread that we're on. I'll say I'm Janine Loudon. I'm normally from Corvallis, Oregon. Today I'm calling in from Kapalina, Big Island, Hawaii, kind of halfway between Honoka'a and Waipio. I've had a little technical difficulty getting in, so thanks for having a great conversation with me. in terms of, what's going on here, please continue and I will chime in.
I mean, what do you say to people, Janine, when they say it's too late? The time for fighting has come and gone, and it's too late. What do you say to people like that?
Oh, well, I guess I don't agree with that. I'm still alive. You know, this is still the United States of America, and we still at least say we have a democracy. Our Constitution is still in place, and until all those criteria are nullified, it is not too late. You know, we have things available to us, and there are roles for everyone to play. There are roles outlined for citizens. There are roles outlined for, there are roles the lawyers get to play. There are roles that others get to play, and I don't feel played out at all. I share the frustration I've been hearing as people share, because one of our opponents, if you want to call that, is exactly the spin doctors or the marketeers that would have us believe we're spent or that there is no place to go from here, but I don't believe them. And I don't believe them because that's just words. That's just some kind of mantra that someone else is saying, but it doesn't hold true with the Constitution. It doesn't hold true with my gut and my commitment to democracy. So, no, I don't believe that. Do we need to take a look at our strategy? Do we need to always be learning and growing? Yes. But are we done? No way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about strategy. I would love to hear from you guys, like, what are your lessons from direct experience with whatever organizing you've done, either through the coffee party or not with the coffee party, with Occupy, whatever, your reflections. This is end of the year reflection time. What is working and what's not working? I'm curious to hear about that. And I want to bring in Christopher Ritter back, see if he's available to talk. But I'm going to start with Jessica. Why don't you share your thoughts, Jessica?
Well, I was involved with the Republicans, like I said, but I've also been involved with the Democratic Party in our state. And the biggest lesson I learned is that Robert's Rule of Order is a real gatekeeper for getting new recruits in. If they've never been to a meeting that is using Robert's Rules, a lot of times they just get lost and they have no idea what's going on. So I think we need some teachers, and I think that's where the coffee party can really make a difference, because I think people like to have an invitation. They like to have permission. When I hear people say it's too late, I'm reminded of this quote. It's often attributed to Nelson Mandela. Could I say it really fast?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure.
It's actually Marianne Williamson, and it says, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. You're playing small. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others." And so I think when the teachers who've been in the movements, who've been involved in politics, can come alongside those newly inspired people who are ready to take action and inspire them and give them some tools. I'm really inspired by the idea of lobbying Congress. I loved Lobby Day. I can't wait to go back with Steve Law, who is another fellow Minnesotan who was down there in D.C. He and I are both from St. Paul. We had never met each other before, and now we're going to start our own chapter, and our goal is to bring a busload of people to Washington, you know? So,
that's great.
I think, though, there's some ideas. I don't know.
Huh? I love that. Okay, I'm going to call on Tom, and then Eric Byler, and then Diane. Okay, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of in that same vein, I mean, there's another quote, which is from the Virginia Act for Establishing Religious Freedom, which was, you know, penned by Thomas Jefferson. And it's, you know, that truth is great and will prevail if left to herself, and that she is the proper and sufficient antagonist to error. And there's nothing to fear from the conflict unless by human interposition and disarmed of her natural weapons, free argument and debate. So, I mean, I guess in that vein, as long as we're actually bringing the truth to the people, as long as we're consistent and bringing these issues to, you know, the front of people's minds, I think that, you know, it's something that can really start to have a snowball effect and start to get people involved. You know, I know that Julian Assange likes to say, I mean, love him or hate him, I mean, he likes to say that, you know, courage is contagious. And I think that in terms of courage, you know, publishing classified documents from the world's only superpower is a pretty brave thing to do. And, you know, in terms of people who say that, you know, the time to fight is gone, I think that, you know, the time to fight is now. Now is the time for us to, you know, to be brave when we have all these other people at our back that really care about the same things that we do and care about these issues, that, you know, now is the time to actually stand up and make that difference. I mean, I was down at Occupy Pittsburgh last weekend, and I kind of came to this conclusion while I was down there that, you know, my whole life at least, you know, I've heard people that are older than myself constantly say about how corrupt politicians are and the system is corrupt and they don't care about us and, you know, so on and so forth. I know we've all heard these very same things. But I think that now is the time where everyone's kind of getting together and saying, wait a minute, it is messed up, but let's do something about it. We don't have to you know, stand by and watch this anymore. We can actually make this difference right now in our lives. We don't have to be another generation of people who can look to our children and say, yeah, the system's bought, don't bother voting, because it doesn't matter either way, and that all politicians are corrupt. No, I mean, now is the time for us to actually make that change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we can do that, you know, by speaking the truth, by taking a message to the people, and by getting more people involved. And, you know, going back to what you were saying, Annabelle, about voting, you know, we need to get people out that actually care about the system, actually care about the things that we care about, and we need to put those people into a position of power so we can actually start to change these things.
All right. We lost Diane, by the way. She had to sign off. But I'm wondering if Eric and Chris can weigh in. Eric, are you there?
Why don't you go to Chris first, and then I'll go after him.
Okay, Chris?
Yes.
Hey, Chris, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great note to chime in on, talking about getting people involved. I feel like on the topic of strategy, really, when you it goes back to this conversation we're having about the narrative, and that if we've been discussing about getting people in the streets and so forth, and I feel like the narrative in which we amass ourselves in some public location and attempt to get our voices heard, you know, I do feel like that is something of a frustrating narrative, to say the least. But if we start telling stories that lead us to a position of power so that we can get together, I feel like the Occupy movement, you know, it did begin on Wall Street, and I do believe that it, you know, certainly had points that are relevant to all America, but I believe that the spirit of the Occupy movement, something that is still emerging, is most relevant in our hometowns, where, you know, a lot of times if we fall on a hard luck that, you know, we look to the church or our friends and family and so forth, but it's as if our communities are no longer a part of the equation, right? That we're not, you know, we're living in a place that's not a community. It's not communal. It's not together. And I feel as if we take that approach where we want to take back the power, that it's not as much a matter of speaking to them and hoping that we're heard, but bringing the teachers in and having them show us how things work in our local communities so that we can get involved, so that we can take control, so that we can change the system, I feel is a very powerful narrative.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Eric, you ready? Eric Beiler. Okay. Are you there?
Okay, sorry about that. I had to turn my mute button off. Well, I just, you know, I was talking to Ryan Clayton, one of the original coffee partiers, just yesterday, and he said, you know, if they can get this far by repeating a lie over and over and over again, imagine what we can do by repeating the truth over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't choose, if I could, the hand that was dealt to the 1%, that they do have to rely on their immense wealth and the advantages that they can purchase to propagate lies. I couldn't bring myself to do that for a living. So I like the hand that we're dealt. We're forced to deal with the truth, and we have to find methods of communication that are more affordable, and that's just the way it is. And so when we're talking about all this money and Citizens United and, oh, it's hopeless, what are we really talking about? What does that money buy? It buys airtime. It buys airtime on the dominant media venues of the 20th century, like television and radio. We're in the 21st century now, and the dominant media venues or whatever are not as elite as they had been. They're not things that only the 1% can afford to purchase. Annabelle and I reach, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years we've been working together, you know, millions of people on YouTube, millions of people every month on Facebook. The coffee party has, you know, really helped to shift the narrative and sort of helped America join the global democracy movement over the past 2 years. And we've done this with no money at all. So they've got a lot of money. We've got a lot of people. And we're beginning to use these tools that are only just emerging. This is the infancy of the democratization of media. You know, it's just beginning to happen that people spend as much time on the internet as they do watching television. I think that as time goes on, people will spend more and more time on the internet, and the advertisements that the corporations can buy to try to essentially propagandize us into voting against our own economic interests, people are going to be TiVoing right past them, and people are going to be free to seek out information that they find credible and authentic on the internet. And I think with that, it won't really matter how much money they use to propagate lies, because the people will have a natural hunger for the truth and we will find it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Janine, what do you think?
Well, continuing this idea, I do believe that my experience has been the more the truth is spoken, the more powerful it becomes. And by the way, the Mandela quote has been on my refrigerator forever. You know, my kids had their little artwork up, and they put it around this same Mandela quote that we started this with. Because that's, you know, I think the younger people see that they are immensely powerful, the more they actually believe it. It is dangerous to believe yourself capable of anything. And I think that's a wonderful place to begin. So one of the things that drove me, you know, brought me to the coffee party in the first place is that I was hungry for a place to be where the truth was a louder statement than the personalization of the lie, you know, where name-calling was not, you know, it was in the background maybe, there, you know, it's out there in the world, but what was being screamed was the truth. And so it wasn't, it was depersonalized. And so our conversation was staying with facts and issues, and it made it possible to move powerfully in a way that we could talk about what was missing or what was right or what was wrong with what was going on and what possible solutions were, as opposed to having to dodge the spin bullets all the time or the things that are all the distractions in the common conversation. That seemed really wordy, but I think you know what I'm talking about. We can get caught up in the drama mm-hmm. of saving democracy or the issue, but or we can actually look to the cycle of corruption as we've defined it. We can look to the mischief within the ruling for Citizen United. Where does the mischief lie? Where is the logic flaw? Where is the, you know, and we can say, look at that, look right there. Mm-hmm. And not get caught up in who said it or what party they belong to or, you know, any of that. And then it's easier for people to see when it's been depersonalized and it's issue-only oriented. And we're saying to our friends and neighbors, look at that right there. And I, you know, in my family, we are a family divided in the sense that, you know, we have coffee party people and we have the tea party people. And this has made my life functional now in being able to discuss these things. And I do think a part of the strategy has been to polarize us with this drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so somehow the truth, or I don't want to overuse the word truth, but if you can remove the drama and so that our world is no longer a soap opera, but is truly a what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
What has happened to us such that all of us, regardless of what we think we believe, are all falling down the well together? You know, what's wrong here?
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, now we can, you know, as we're falling down the well, we're beginning to be able to speak.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. If we had a word cloud for this conversation, the truth would be the biggest word.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then actually we have said the word teacher a few times as well, which is interesting. And I guess, you know, this
I guess the thing that makes me go back to what I was saying, like, there's a reason why we've connected like this. You know, it's not just some weird fluke that we connected through a Facebook fan page, and then we had a chance to really get to know one another and decide to really make a commitment to work together, right? And approaching
yes.
it in a way that really, I think, to me, is still the right path, which is to deal with a polarization, which is really another way of saying not submitting to divide and conquer, which is an ancient tactic of the ruling class to divide and conquer the people. And that's what we're up against. I mean, that's why civility is so important. It's not just because it's nice. We're asking people to be nice. That's not it. It's fine to be nice. But really, we're saying we're allowing ourselves to get divided and conquered. And until we reject that, until we see that as a tactic and we reject it, then we can really empower ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I agree with that. We're not
yes.
even free right now to disagree. We're
yes.
not free right now to have an honest disagreement because it is so polarized.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I want to share with you guys my fear. I've been, like, mulling this in my head. I've been, and I've been trying to write about it, but it's kind of terrifying. It's really scary. Eric makes me watch these horror movies to relax. It relaxes him to see people get killed or eaten. he's made me, like, watch all these horror movies.
Because we want to, I like to see people who are in a worse situation than America.
No, you love, I don't know, I think it's like more primal than that, but anyway, but I do find it scary to think about this, that here are two things. One is that, yes, we've been saying, we want people, we need more people out on the street or just more engaged, period, right? And we know that we have to raise the scale. Two, there is, by, you know, assessment of a lot of people who know about our economic situation, economists and, you know, even people on Wall Street, there's a perfect storm brewing that is probably going to lead us to another recession or collapse, maybe worse than 2008. And, you know, a lot of people I respect are saying it's inevitable. It's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. It might be as soon as next year. We don't know. But it's going to happen because we never fixed the things that led to the 2008 financial crisis. In fact, we made some things worse because the banks are now bigger. Right? So the too big to fail is now even bigger than it was in 2008. So I guess that's what is making me think. What's going to happen is people are just going to either be in paralysis or they're going to be frustrated or disengaged until there's another financial crisis and there's another need for a bailout. And we're going to go through it all over again. And we're going to be either out on the street or we're going to be, again, so shell-shocked and traumatized and frightened that we don't do anything. Right? That's my fear, is what's going to happen. So that's why I guess I feel so, energetic about trying to figure out how to avert this financial crisis and see if we can get people engaged before we're at that point where we have a gun to our head. Go ahead.
Well,
this is a
big, this can be a big economic conversation. It can be a small one. One of the things that I think is that, is to know for yourself, you know, what is it that you want to have happen here? And so you have to think through this for yourself. What would you like to see happen? What I want to see happen is for this not to happen. And so one would behave in a particular way if you had an intended outcome. And maybe you'd have your plan B was, okay, what if it does happen? But in the process of, what I haven't said about myself, maybe I should give the little caveat here, is I'm a retired business person. Yes, I'm from the capitalistic camp. But I was a small business person. I understand economics. I understand finance. I understand business. And part of what mobilizes me is that I think there's just so much mischief over there now. It's crazy. I spent a good number of my years as middle management in multinational businesses. I sort of lost my taste for that and launched my own firm. I had employees up and down the West Coast. I did government contracting, among other things. And it's, you know, so I played with the big players, but I was never a big player myself. I walk these walks, and I know these hallways, and I know these people. And I got to tell you, they're just full of themselves. And it's just not a fundamental tenet of capitalism that you leverage your money to cripple the government so you can game the system, take everything and run. That's, you know, that just isn't it. And, you know, to take criminal acts, use your leverage to make them no longer criminal, exercise those acts and say, ha ha, I won, isn't capitalism. Now, it doesn't really matter what it is, but it's mischief. And it's killing us. You know, it is killing our country. It's, as a matter of fact, it's killing the world economy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of our job is to let people know it really is that simple. It is that you don't have to be, some brilliant PhD economist to understand that they're using their money to make what things that used to be illegal now legal so that they can game us. It's a con. It's made legal. And so we need to fix those things, make them illegal again. And all kinds of things don't happen when that occurs. So, you know, my first preference would be restore law and order in that domain. Mm. And once law and order is restored in that domain, we have some economic wiggle room. But then there's plan B. You know, what if we start approaching that? You have to make up your mind in advance. What would one do? Well, you know, not all countries bailed out their banks, yes? So I guess, you know, that's for other people to chime in on. I've taken enough airtime here. But, you know, part of me would say no. No. And how would we prepare for that? But I think the first thing, we've talked about truth. We've talked about education. Eric talked about the media, the new media, not the propaganda paparazzi, the new media. And the new media needs to let us know that all of this is knowable. It is not overwhelming. This is very simple, and that we can exercise on a daily basis moving our country back into economic civility. And that's actually a possibility that I would like to see. Thanks.
That's great. Oh, by the way, you have a fan in the chat room saying, someone named Nicole saying, love your voice, Janine. Very effective frame. you're getting fans already. We need to start a fan.
Oh, my gosh.
Janine. Okay.
I want to announce that Janine is going to she's going to have a blog coming out very soon. In fact, she's done with the writing, and we're just trying to do the behind-the-scenes technical architecture, because it's going to be kind of an interactive introductory blog post that Janine wrote to introduce the new board of directors. She is our secretary on the first elected board of directors for Coffee Party that takes office on January 1st, 2012. And actually Christopher Ritter, who I think is still on the show, he's going to be the second person. And actually all nine of us are going to write essays introducing ourselves to the membership and introducing a new conversation that is going to involve polling to get input from members. It's also going to involve all of us having Coffee Party email boxes for our members to communicate their interests and their concerns and their hopes and their policy and strategy ideas to us. Actually, I have to jump on another call right now to start working on some of the technical stuff to support Janine's blog post, so I'll say goodbye. But yeah, if you like Janine's voice, you're going to hear a lot more of it. The blog post is going to have some videos embedded as well. So thanks very much. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Aloha, Eric.
Bye, Eric.
Hello.
So that'd be great. I mean, you know, maybe Janine, you can start a radio show as well. But so back to the discussion we were having about my fear. I'm wondering if Tom or Jessica has anything to say about that.
Do you want to go first, or?
I've been talking a lot, so I'll let you go first.
Okay, now I was feeling I guess I would just go. I can only speak to my own experience. And in Minnesota, a lot of the different counties have boards for their parties, and we do have the political party system. And there is a ton of room for people to get involved. The way that we endorse our candidates who are running for national Senate or representative seats is through a state convention. And in order to get to the state convention, you had to go to caucus and be elected as delegate to your county convention, go to county convention, be elected as a delegate to the state convention. And then when you went to the state convention, you voted to endorse the person that you felt was best candidate for your party. And so the year I went was 2008, and Al Franken was running against some other people. My guy was Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. And in the meantime, leading up to the state convention, everybody's calling each other and trying to get people to vote for their guy or girl. And during that entire process, you know, when I went to caucus, for example, out of my ward, 8 people could have gone to the county convention, but I was the only one who was willing to go. So I just think there is so much opportunity out there for people to get involved. But like I said, if you don't have the invitation, if you don't have the permission, if you don't have the understanding of how to get there and that you do matter and that you can be involved, how many people are going to really go out of their way to do it? So I think that's a great opportunity. I don't know how it is in every state, obviously, but just to get people involved in that way, because it's great to protest. Wouldn't it be greater if people were running for office and if we were electing people who had amazing ideas that could really represent us?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Is that you with the barking dog, by the way?
Oh, that's
no,
me.
It's not.
I'll see if I can mute myself. Hang on.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, thanks, Jessica. Tom, did you want to add something?
I can't find mute on my phone. Can you mute me? This is Janine.
Yeah.
Annabelle. Can you mute me?
Yeah, got you. Okay. Tom?
Yeah, I mean, just listening to everybody talk, I'm kind of reminded of the one scene in the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson. I'm not sure who's all seen it, but, I mean, there's a part where a guy in the movie is trying to get a bunch of people to go fight, you know, the American Revolution, and the preacher comes out of the church, and everyone's kind of questioning him and why he's, you know, carrying his gun off the war. And the thing he says is that sometimes that a shepherd must tend to his flock, and sometimes he must fight off the wolves. And I mean, just listen to everybody talk right now. I think that, you know, that's exactly what this movement is all about, and what, you know, we should be recruiting people to do is that, you know, the 99%, you know, quote unquote, is the flock. And, you know, I think that each one of us who is involved right now is so to speak a shepherd. And I mean, just in the course of this conversation, we've talked about various issues that you know, individuals on their own can care about. I think that, you know, the people that are involved right now are the exceptions to the rule, in the sense that, you know, we care about a lot of these different issues. You know, I know that a lot of people are a lot more specialized, but from a broad range, you know, we've talked about the unemployment benefits that are being held hostage, the middle class tax cuts that are being held hostage, you know, that economic implications of systemically important financial institutions that are, you know, privatizing their gains and socializing their losses, or else we're going to have a huge economic collapse. And I mean, there's all kinds of room for people to get involved. You know, kind of going back to what we were saying before, is that I mean, now is definitely the time to do it, and I think that now is the best time to really show people how much of a difference we can make and how strong we really are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a caller identified as Piston Pilot. Okay, Hi, did you want to join us?
Well, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Is the Coffee Party supporting President Obama?
What's the second question?
Well, that's the first question.
Okay. What was the second one? You said you had a couple of questions.
Well, it'll hinge on the answer to that. And I'll tell you, how can I want to know how we can vote for Obama again when he has come out with this military, whatever it is, where now they're going to haul everybody off and we can be arrested, even Americans, but we have no rights to legal defense. But what are we doing?
Right. Yeah, so this is the troubling National Defense Authorization Act that is very controversial, that has some very, very scary language in there about, you know, the military's military detention. I mean, actually, I just found out recently that it does, in the language of this bill, codify what is already happening. I mean, you know, we basically, you know, even as citizens, this is Glenn Greenwald who writes about this, that even as citizens, our government does have a right to detain us right now. If there's any suspicion that we have any connection to Al-Qaeda, I mean, that just has been the case, and this bill, I guess, really makes it explicit. In all the controversy, they did exempt non-citizens from mandated military detention, but my understanding is that the president still has the right to make a decision about whether or not you can be detained just based on suspicion, even if you're a citizen, through a civilian detention, not military. I think that's my understanding of what's going on in that bill. But I guess those powers already exist even without this bill. The bill just makes it explicit. Anyway, so I mean, I don't want to go into all that because I'm not sure a lot of people are still, you know, debating what this really means in terms of our rights. But you know, I think since 9/11, many of our rights have been under threat and taken away. I mean, Patriot Act probably did more damage than really anything else. And but in terms of whether or not we support Obama, we don't actually take official positions on any candidate. So no, we're not going to officially endorse anyone, including President Obama. We're going to try to get people to be informed about the candidates and the issues so that people can make their own decisions. And we're going to make it clear which ones really support the things that we support. You know, but again, like, people have to make those decisions because it's a very complex decision. It's because, you know, there's so many things that go into your very personal decision about which person you want to elect as president. So that's sort of the answer to your first question, that, you know, no, we're not going to be supporting him as officially. There are, I'm sure many of our members will be supporting Obama, but I think I can speak for, you know, a lot of people in the Coffee Party that we wish that there were better choices out there. You know, that, and not just at the presidential level, but all levels. We many of us feel that the two-party system is not working and would love to figure out how to open up the process to more parties, more candidates, and people who do not need to raise money in order to get elected. You know, so I think there has to be a better way to elect our representatives, period. And so I guess that's probably more of the consensus, and where we could all work together as fellow Americans, regardless of what party you're in, what your ideology is. I think many people would want to see the process opened up and that it isn't monopolized by the two major parties, and that we're not going to be able to break this gridlock until we open up the process, until there are other major parties that can put pressure on these two major parties. So I don't know if that answers your question. I have another caller I want to bring in. Hang on a second. 490 number. Go ahead. Hello? Hello, are you there? Okay. Let's see. So Tom or Janine, I don't know if you guys want to have anything to add to that, or Jessica.
I think you pretty much summed it up pretty well. I mean, you know, from a coffee party's perspective, I think that at least the way that I interpret our movement is that we're more of a party based on issues. And and the truth, like we were saying before, I mean, if we had that word cloud, the truth would definitely be you know, the biggest word in there.
Janine, how about you? What do you think?
Well, I do think that's part of the power of what the coffee party is up to, is that we're pointing to issues. And the other thing about the truth, I think, is sometimes you need to say what is real as many ways as possible and maintain the reality of the description. And then at some point it's going to fall in. You know, people are going to understand it. So, yes, it's important to stick to the issue and leave the personalities out of it. And so, yes, I one of the things I like is that we're not endorsing candidates, at least not right now.
Mm-hmm. Jessica?
I really like the educational aspect of the coffee party and all of the work that goes into posting articles and links to more information, and I think that probably speaks to the idea of putting the truth out there in as many ways possible. And I think I also really appreciate the inclusivity of it all. I think that because we're so inclusive and we do cover such a broad range, it's a welcoming mat for a lot of different people, and that's what we need to solve this problem. We need a lot of different people coming together and working together. That's what made us the strongest country in the world, and that's what's going to continue to make us strong. And because we have this space where we can start talking to each other, it's only going to grow and get better.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this thing, from the beginning, you know, people wanted us to endorse candidates and or become a major party, become a third party, and in a election year in which so many people seem unhappy with their choices, there's so much talk about third parties, and I put a lot of thought into it, and I don't really know what it would take to, you know, break the gridlock and have a multi-party system, but I feel like that is inevitable. I think it has to happen at some point that we're gonna have to put pressure on the two major parties to do things differently, because they're just you know, the gridlock is killing us. You know, it really is. I mean, it's killing our economy, and it's downgrading our credit. And I don't see them deciding one day that it's going to stop. I feel like it's going to continue until they're forced to, by pressures from us and a possibility or a real third party. Like I just don't think they're gonna stop the gridlock. And that isn't the same thing as saying both parties are equally bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's the two-party system that creates this gridlock that no one likes, none of the people like. You know, I mean, we have in the last kind of remaining minutes, like I want to talk about this idea. I'm too bad Eric's not here, but you know, I love in the Occupy movement, I love the idea of the people's mic. And I know that kind of grew out kind of accidentally because they couldn't use a mic system, an electric mic system in Zuccotti Park. That was one of the restrictions. So they could, you know, this people's mic thing got evolved of you saying a few words and then everybody else repeating it. But, I mean, in some ways it's like a perfect emblem of the evolution in communication that has to happen, is it's about giving voice to the people and people themselves amplifying the message. And I feel that that's
what we have been trying to do using social media from the beginning is to figure out how to create that people's mic so that our voices can be heard and amplified without the resources of mainstream media, you know, without any resources, really. I mean, for most of the time we've existed, we've had, like, no financial resources. We've relied on mostly volunteers and free tools. I mean, that's changed because we did manage to raise some money, but, you know, mostly our model is still, you know, we do everything we can for as little as possible because we want to use the power of numbers to amplify the message and the voices and to get the truth to go viral. There's that word again, truth. And I think it's about creating that, you know, infrastructure. We talk a lot about, like, creating infrastructure using the internet, but I mean, this is the part I want to really focus on. And the next time we talk, is it's a psychological thing. I think it's a psychological switch that has to go off. Like, all of you guys on this call, you have decided that you're going to take it upon yourselves to help educate and learn the truth, right?
Yes.
And if everyone did that, if, you know, everybody we know did that, they took it upon themselves to be, have that agency, to have that commitment and to say that I'm going to help deliver the truth to everyone else and be part of the people's mic, then, you know, then there's a winner right there. You know, yeah, that would really change the game. And that is exactly why the State Department invests in money to provide internet and social media tools to people in Iran and other repressive regimes, because they know eventually when people have these tools, they're going to rise up and they're going to have power, right? And the State Department knows that. And you know, we have to own that, know that, live that, and proselytize and convince everybody that they have to be part of the people's mic to get the truth out. Because we can't depend on the media to do it.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Well, I mean, I'm so grateful to you guys. Like, I just knowing, meeting you guys and knowing you guys is really inspiring, and it keeps me going. And I've been asking people this question, like, you know, how do you keep going when it's just so exhausting and you don't know how long it's going to take to make these changes and people are telling you it's too late? Like, how do you keep going? And, like, my answer to that is, like, you know, having these kinds of meetings and conversations with people like you, like, that keeps me going, because that makes, I mean, there's no way I can walk away from this conversation and say, oh, I'm so depressed about the state of the world, because I know that you guys are all on the same page, and there are so many of us, and we are finding one another. We're networking, and we are making that commitment that we're gonna work together.
Yeah.
You know, that I walked away from the Enough is Enough citizens intervention in Washington D.C. You know, first of all, popsicle, but, you know, so moved by. Somebody said the essence, you know, the essence of the coffee party braved the storm and made it to the event. And I realized who we were and what we were was the espresso, you know, of the movement. And I just fell in love with everyone. And it's not like a love-in kind of love, but it was like there was so much devotion to America. There was so much devotion to democracy. It's kind of like that agape kind of love where we were so committed to the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and so enrolled in how we see the path we see to restoring democracy to its rightful place in our world, that it's very moving and I just left so
like you said, Annabelle, so touched and connected. There you go. That's the word I'm looking for. Connected to everyone who was there.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Tom? What do you think?
I mean, bringing it full circle, I mean, you know, something you said earlier, Annabelle, is, you know, we all kind of met from a Facebook fan page. And I know that, you know, Billy Sears likes to say a lot that, you know, the coffee party is his second family. And in a lot of ways, I feel like that, too. And like a family, you know, we're very inclusive. You know, we all have the conservative uncle that watches Fox News all the time. And we all have the liberal who, you know, used to be a hippie and now just sits around watching MSNBC all day. You know, we have all of that. And like a family, you know, I think that we can have these kind of serious conversations. We can fight and we can bicker. But in the end, you know, we're the coffee party. We're all still friends in the end. And I guess to kind of take it one step further, I mean, something that you said, too, is, you know, if everyone participated in this quest for the truth, I mean, why can't the way that the coffee party works be the way that our American family works? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the American family is kind of dysfunctional right now, you know. So, like, it's like, you know, I call my uncle a fascist and he calls me a dirty hippie commie socialist. And we don't talk.
And then you hug.
You know what
you
I
hug
mean?
It out.
Yeah, well, then we don't talk for 3 years, you know, and that's like the American family way of doing it. But in the coffee party way, you know, we kind of can rise above all of that, and we can say, you know, look, let's have a serious conversation about what's going on in our country. Let's put all the dirty words and all the nasty names aside, and let's you know, sit down and let's talk this out. Because in the end, and one thing that the coffee party's definitely taught me is that in the end, we all want the same thing regardless of what, you know, the political issues might say or what the news might say or what, you know, category we get lumped into. I mean, just from the convention alone, that was the one thing I took away from that. And enough is enough reaffirmed that in the most extreme way possible. So I definitely think that what we're doing is making a difference, you know, one person, one fan at a time. And the more we keep having this conversation, I think the more – you know, people are actually going to start following it and start believing as we believe that, you know, the truth is what really matters, and that's what's going to, you know, actually change our democracy back to what we all know and love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just leave you guys with this thought. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with fighting. It's okay to fight. I think, you know, politics is, in the end, it's a power struggle, and there's nothing wrong with fighting. I think it's fighting with people discrediting you as a human being so that your voice is completely nullified, to use dehumanizing language so that your value as a person is in question. That's when it's problematic. But fighting itself, I think, you know, we're passionate people. You know, we want to have influence. And I think it's not something we should be afraid of, to be out there, you know, fighting and getting into some fights with each other when we have very passionate opinions. That's a natural outcome. But it's the way we have been conditioned to accept and tolerate really dehumanizing language that takes the humanity out of it. That's when, you know, it's like we have to reject that kind of language and politics. But I welcome fighting. I think we need to do more of it. Just openly, just put it out there. Let yourself be passionate and speak up. You know, we can't, we don't want to be in danger of suppressing our voices because we're afraid of our emotions, afraid of being uncivil. I think we should just allow ourselves to be passionate. You know, so I just want to kind of address that because I feel like some people take the civility thing too far and they get afraid that there's something wrong with fighting when I think it's a natural human activity. I come from a Korean family, so there's a, you know, it's like an Italian family where there's a lot of arguments going on and it's pretty much normal.
Well, I agree. There's a place for passion,
yeah.
And I'm very passionate about the truth. And so I step in when there's mischief in the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
like the truth being misrepresented. I don't like to use the word lie because I think lots of times people just repeat stuff. So I don't know that they're overtly lying, But there's so much misinformation out there that sometimes you just got to put a stick in the spokes and stop that wheel.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of room for passion, especially when we use this T word all the time.
Okay. You know, I'm sorry to interrupt, Janine. We have 60 seconds, so I just want to give everyone a chance to say goodbye to each other
absolutely.
Before we get cut off. So go ahead, finish your thought, and then 20 seconds each. Go ahead, Janine.
Well, I'm done, and it's been great being here. I'm sorry it took me so long to get on. Aloha. See you soon.
Bye, Janine. Jessica?
I just want to thank all of the people that put so much into Citizens Intervention and all of the people who I met there, who my fear was that I'd never get to talk to them again, and we've done nothing but chatter constantly since I got back. So thank you for that opportunity. I found my people.
Thank you. Tom?
Yeah, thanks for having this call. You know, I mean, thanks everyone who's on it, everyone who's listening. I mean, it's always great to have these kind of conversations, and I hope that we can have more of them in the future.
Thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week. Hopefully Janine's going to agree to co-host with me again. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, you guys.